Welcome in, latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Brennan. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And we're here with our great friend, Stephen Lassen, Senior Editor, Athlon Sports. Stephen, it's been, it's been about a week. How you been?
I'm doing great, Mike. How are you? This was our first weekend without football in a long time. Are you doing okay? Do we need to talk through some feelings? Are you not too sad, right?
Oh no, it's been horrible over here. If anybody, obviously everybody in here, I think they've been paying attention to the channel. Shane has taken it over with his videos of Orlando. He's doing interviews now without me with old Rusty Manziel. So go check that out. He's got another one upcoming. I don't even know if I've got a place on this channel anymore, Steven.
Man, cousin Shane goes to Orlando and orchestrates a takeover of the channel. What the heck is going on? I mean, is he secretly like a Big Ten, like, you know, quietly like trying to get into the SEC channel? Are you like, you're going to start posting Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan previews? What the heck's going on, Mike?
I can guarantee you there is not a drop a Big Ten in that big man's heart. I can promise you that.
He went to Florida. That is probably going to be Big Ten territory. And
I didn't think about it. All those boomers down there, right?
Yeah, that. And once they add Miami and maybe Florida State, you know, those all those rumors that exist for years out there.
Yeah. Well, obviously we're deep into basketball season. Baseball just started to kick off. But we know that there's plenty of you out there, just like us, at college football, and obviously SEC football is your first love. So that's why we got Steven back on. He's been coming up with topics to discuss. And, of course, he doesn't do basketball. He doesn't do baseball. He says, to heck with all that. He's college football encyclopedia for a reason. So Steven came up with a great idea. He's not a hot-button clickbait, despite what his quarterback rankings say. That's not Steven. But he loves this panic meter. So that was all his doing during the season. That was a great, who was the panic meter week in and week out that we covered. And now we're back with, again, this is all Steven. So don't come at me with the panic, but panic meter for every team heading into spring football, this SEC season. Steven, what made you already, I mean, we're mid February here. You're hovering your hand over the panic button already.
So I was, I just happened to see some, kind of worries and like not very much optimism from some fan bases. I'm going through all the 136 teams right now as we're working on our magazine. And so it just happened to, I just stumbled into some commentary from some fans and they just said there was really no reason to get excited for spring practice or the upcoming season. And I thought, this might make sense to talk about with Mike on Monday. So here we are talking some panic meter and I love doing it during the season. I probably was not as reactionary as I should have been. Maybe I might be too reactionary tonight.
Okay. Well, hey, we'll get into all that, but here's a $1 million question. Uh-oh. Shout out cousin JR. Even when he's not here, he's here. Appreciate you, brother. He just gave us $5. I missed the last live due to my daughter's birthday party. So tonight we'll make up for it. JR, what a legend you are, and happy birthday to your daughter. The best cousin out there is JR. Yeah, everybody wish JR's daughter a happy birthday in the comments. We appreciate you, buddy. But, and he just gifted 5 memberships, Steven. He's right. You don't have to make it up to us, JR. You do enough, but he's doing it anyway. So, let me, I got to look it up on this new format we're on, Steven. I never know who got the... who's on the receiving end of the donations. So let's hit, while I do that, another topic, I'm already seeing it in the comments. This is kind of the biggest story in college football right now. The SEC and the Big Ten taking control of college football, Stephen. Can you break it down, your understanding of it and your initial thoughts?
Yeah, it's kind of complicated, but just keep in mind, so the playoff format for the 2025 season could change a little bit. We could change the seeding, how some of that breaks down, but it has to be unanimous. The key thing going forward in 2026 is that it does not have to be unanimous. And according to some of the reporting through Yahoo, is that the Big Ten and SEC basically told the other conferences, we're going to start our own thing unless you give us greater control. there are some hard feelings, I think, still dating back to after expansion and how Sankey and some of the other commissioners put together the 12-team field. They kind of haggled over it. So I think just kind of keep in mind, like, why is this happening is always an important question, is that the Big Ten and SEC have the biggest brains. And they basically decided that they are going to take more control. You're also seeing this with a lot of things like the House settlement and some of the rules and some of the things that will go on after that. But they have the biggest brands. They want more money. They want more control. And they're willing to say to these other conferences, like, hey, if you don't come along, we're going to do our own thing. And that's kind of what you're seeing these other conferences stay involved with. Because if they don't, the risk is pretty obvious. You're going to get stuck into a very not so good playoff format and not very much dollars coming your way.
Right. And real quick, I don't want to ignore the legend JR. So these are the people he gifted. Alto Rick, Joval 64, Billy on 2005, Chris Wilson and Mason Mullins. Welcome to the family, courtesy of the legend JR. What a guy. What a guy. But yeah, so I mean that's fascinating, isn't it, Stephen? So it certainly sounds like they're going to also apologies if you said this, but expand the playoff from 12 to 14, maybe 16. We'll see. That none of this has officially been decided, but you know, it shouldn't really become as a huge surprise. SEC and Big Ten are dominating in terms of revenue, like you said, brands, fandom. I mean, shows like it. I mean, literally, we could not do this show. Well, I guess we could, but no one would watch it. If it was ACC or Big Ten or Rest in Peace Pac-12, you know what I mean? Like, you guys are SEC sickos, and that's why we love you, because we are too. So, you know, that's why this exists. But I'm seeing mostly negative reactions to this, Stephen, which I'm sure I just want to get out in front before you and your negativity and your panic. You're hitting a panic meter on all this. I get it. Is it good for the sport? I don't know. Probably not. But is it good for the SEC? Hell yeah. and here's the biggest thing. The thing I care about more than anything else. I mean, at the end of the day, is it nice to have Boise State and Arizona State get in there? That's fine. You know, because the sport should. Growing up, the sport was national, and everyone deserves a shot, even though that's like fantasy land. I mean, Boise State had no shot to win the national championship. I don't care what their record was. They weren't going to go through Ohio State and Georgia and Penn State and Notre Dame. They just weren't going to do it. So I don't know why we got to pretend like that's a reality. But at the end of the day, Steven, the biggest thing with all this expansion, with the SEC and potentially and obviously the Big Ten kind of seizing control, it sounds like the SEC for sure, if they get their way, which again, they control all of this, so I don't see why they wouldn't, we're going to go to a 9-game SEC slate. And that's what I really care about at the end of the day. Yeah, I mean, it's great winning national championships and all that, but to me, the end of the day, the regular season is still king. That's why I love college football, and this ensures that we're going to get Texas to Texas A&M annually. I mean, why the hell are they in the conference if they're not going to play every year? We're going to get Alabama, Tennessee annually. We're going to get Auburn, Georgia annually. And we're going to get back great rivalries like Auburn, Florida. May not play every year, but they'll play every other year probably if we go to this 9-game. And we'll just get more of these great games. We'll get Texas, Tennessee every other year, if not annually. I would be surprised if it was annually, but we'll get it every other year. And at the end of the day, that's what I care about, Stephen. And we got 16 great fan bases, and they're going to have the opportunity to play each other more, and they're going to have greater access to the college football playoff. So is it good for the sport? I don't know. Quite frankly, I don't care. It's good for the SEC. That's all I really care about.
So I think you're absolutely right. The college football fan in me says it's not great to do this. It's the Big Ten and SEC basically just taking control of everything. The other reality is, they're probably going to get that many teams in the playoff that many years anyways. Like if this expands, they're probably, so it's basically just saying, instead of putting it in pencil, it's putting it in pen.
Right.
Also something, I think you said something there that was really important. College football is playing the same sport, but the reality is the talent differential is so wide. And just, you know, we talked about this with the roster rankings a few weeks ago. I think 14 out of the 16 teams we're going to end up being top 25 nationally in just roster talent. The Big 12's first team comes in at 30 nationally. So it's not even a top 25 team. It's TCU, just in terms of raw roster talent. And I don't mean that as a shot at the Big 12. They have a great conference from week to week, but the reality is, to Boise State and TCU, it's really hard to win a national championship when your talent is in the 30s and 40s. So the champion is probably always going to come from like a handful of teams. So it's not great nationally, but I think for SEC teams, I think it's a win. And I think for the obvious reason is you're guaranteed four spots. You're also guaranteeing to reduce the power of the committee to some extent too. What do you do with conference championship games has been a question. But if you're in this environment where you're guaranteed spots, you can change it up. You don't have to have one versus two. You could do play-in games.
Right.
But to me, the biggest thing is, Mike, it's what you said. It's nine games. That is what the SEC needs. I want to see more good on good. I get an FCS opponent in there to sort of work out some things early in the season. But that nine-game slate, playing more conference opponents, it'll be better for fan bases, selling tickets. That's the big part that I love the most in all this.
Yeah, and apparently there's also, you know, this may not be finalized yet. It's not just Ross Dellinger, Yahoo, but our good friend Matt Hayes been on the show, has talked about this. There's behind the scenes, they're considering like an SEC Big Ten annual series, showdown, whatever you want to call it. So we may get more of those games too, which, again, who would not be in favor of Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana? I tried to pick an easy one that they could just steamroll, you know what I mean? But, you know, just more of those games certainly could be make for some really fun matchups. I don't know. And again, I don't know that they would do this, Stephen, but the way I would do it, and again, no one's asking my opinion, but teams that already have a locked-in ACC opponent, like a Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, I don't know that I would make them do this. I would make the teams that don't have, like, I would make Tennessee do this. I'd make Vanderbilt do it. Teams that don't have a locked-in mark, because it's almost unfair to make Kentucky do, okay, you got to do nine conference games now. You got to keep playing Louisville. And then, oh, yeah, let's throw you Ohio State too. You know what I mean? Like that's a bit ridiculous to me, but again, what, Mizzou, Nebraska, heck yeah. I mean, who wouldn't sign up for that? You know what?
I think we have to get comfortable as fans with teams having more losses every year. I know that sounds like silly to say it, but you know, like with if you go to nine games, we have to sort of change our perspective, because it used to be, well, you've got to get to 12-0. Now it's like, okay, if like 10-2, that's, you know, that's still a good season. Even 9-3 would be a good season in a nine game SEC slate. So I think our perspective is going to change a little bit. I would be bold here. I would actually schedule a whole slate. I would actually do the whole like 16 teams in the SEC, mm-hmm. and you get 11 games against power four opponents. So if you're, you know, Florida, you're still playing Florida State, but you're playing a Minnesota or somebody over in the Big Ten, and your other game is probably against an FCS opponent. Schedules get harder, but that's also one benefit of this is that I do think you can schedule a little bit more aggressively and not be so worried about losses, because you are guaranteed those spots into the playoff. Also means the SEC's got to add two more teams to match the Big Ten's 18 teams.
Oh, Lord. Okay, we're going to go down that road. So Steven is just wishing death upon all these teams here in Florida. Let's drop Long Island. Let's give you Minnesota, like Steven said. And yeah, I mean, good luck with that. Good luck with that, Steve. I mean, that's going to be insane. And let's get rid of South Florida. Let's make that, Alabama. Why not? You know what I mean? I mean, who wouldn't sign up for that if you're a Florida fan?
I mean, if you're a Florida season ticket holder, you're loving your options for those home games. Like if, you know, you start getting, you know, Texas and Alabama at home. This really kind of, to me, all goes back to one thing, and it's not surprising. Like it's about money. You know, yeah. The SEC and the Big Ten control so much of the revenue distribution already. They will even forward the better schedules that you could play, sells more tickets at home. You sell more concessions. So it's certainly about that. But I think if, as the balance that's going on in my mind is like, if I'm the ACC and Big Ten, I don't love this, but I'm sitting here going, if we get nine SEC games and we get a package of Big Ten games and a different conference championship game, I think that comes out as a win to me.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to be excited about this And it'll, again, it'll be sold as they're ruining college football, yada, yada, yada. Now, it may be a different story, Stephen, if Oklahoma and Texas were still in the Big 12, if the Pac-12 still existed, this would be a nightmare. But, you know, that was a while ago. And with 18-team Super Leagues, 16-team Super Leagues, you know, it's a chaotic mess right now. And I think one of the I always complained about the SEC scheduling, about how unbalanced it was. Now it's more balanced than ever. You know, you can't even compare Florida's and Missouri schedule. You can't compare Tennessee and Georgia's schedule. I mean, it's just night and day different, and it's so hard to determine, you know, who are the best teams. But I think you hit on an important point. I think the end of the season conference championship, that could change now. Now, if they do go ahead and do this and have guaranteed four SEC teams, that championship, which may have to change the name of it, the play-in or whatever, that's probably going to be a battle for fourth place or something like that.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of different strategies you could pursue. I think there's, to go back, like the 2020 season, the Big Ten basically just scheduled a bunch of games on the fly for that last weekend. And you could, in theory, do that again. You could schedule your top eight teams in the league and see them, you know, have like a mini sort of scheduled weekend where one plays eight, you know, four and five are playing together. And maybe it helps some resumes. It certainly hurts them too. But it allows you to be a little bit more creative and not necessarily just run back the one versus two in Atlanta every season. I think it would certainly add some more intrigue to that last weekend. You know, there's certainly some bad in that too, is that if you go to 14 teams, there's really not a room for an at-large spot. It basically becomes everything is set. There's one at-large spot. It's probably going to be Notre Dame. If you go to 16, you get a little bit more at-large breathing room. So you're shrinking the window of opportunity, but at the same time, I think some of the pros probably overcome that.
Mm. Hey, shout out real quick too. Cousin Tim, he turns 57 today. Hotty toddy. And happy birthday, Cousin Tim. Sorry that Lane Wiffen's your coach. I'm just kidding. He's a hell of a guy. I put up number two. All right. So anything else, Steve, before we move on to the panic meter for we're going to hit on all 16 teams here?
Mike, I think we covered it. I think I would expect some news on this probably in the next couple months. I expect that, judging by the story that was on The Athletic, it sounds like the SEC wants to have some sort of decision on the 8 and 9 games by this summer's meetings in May. So I think it's going to move pretty fast.
Well, hopefully the plan is Cousin Shane will be and I will be down there doing some big cuz does work. So let's see if they ban us from the if they ban us from the meetings, we won't be down there. So we won't be banned. Don't get us banned, Steve. That's basically my point. Don't get us banned before that. How about that?
I think a lot of people wanted to ban me after my coach and quarterback rankings, right?
All right, so let's get into it. Panic meter, spring. Let's just go in alphabetical here, unless somebody wants to throw us a donation or something that we could hit their team. But let's do Alabama, Stephen, as I'm struggling with my sinuses here. Alabama, panic meter. I think this one is a little obvious. See where you went with it. But what is the biggest thing causing some panic for you with the Crimson Tide?
So, Mike, feel free to tell me if this number is too low. But I went with 7 for Alabama.
Ooh, man. All the way up to 7, huh?
Maybe I'm overreacting, but I sort of set this number based upon expectations.
Yeah.
Because if I'm Alabama, getting to 9-3, 9-4 isn't good enough. And Kalen DeBoer had a roster in his first season that was good enough to get to the college football playoff. And they came to the doorstep. They didn't get that far. But I think when you think about 2025, is it almost feels like if it doesn't happen this year, it may not happen for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. They've got one of the best defenses in the SEC. They've upgraded their staff, bringing in Ryan Grubb as offensive coordinator. I think their offensive line and receivers are good. It really just comes down to quarterback play. So I think the panic meter is the roster feels like it's a playoff roster, The question is, can Kalen DeBoer get them into the playoff, get kind of over that last year's 9 wins, and also meet high expectations at Alabama?
Mm. Yeah, and one thing, again, I don't know how much stock to put into any of this, Stephen. We're all trying to figure out in the portal era and the NIL era, with returning production, all this data. But I know we shared it a couple weeks ago with the composite talent of just high schoolers, but it didn't account for the portal. And then I've shared with you some other data that I've seen that did factor in the portal, and both of those metrics had Alabama as the best roster in the country. Now, I'm not saying that it is the best roster, but I'm just saying I've looked at two things that have told us that. So that is interesting. I don't think most people currently, you know, not that Alabama's like falling off a cliff, but I would think most people have Alabama probably as like the number 5 roster, but it may be better than that. So you might be onto something here where, you know, 7-8 wins is, if you have the best roster, which again, I'm not definitively saying they do, but some metrics suggest they do. I know it's a tough schedule. We just got done saying there's not going to be undefeateds anymore, really. But if you have a top 3 roster, let's just split the difference there. And you have a coach that many people remember a year ago, Steven, people were saying, "Oh my God, how'd they get this DeBoer? How did we let this happen? They just went from the greatest of all time to the hottest coach college football seen in 10 years. He was a meteoric rise here. Now we're a year removed and we're like, but can this guy even coach?" You know what I mean? So
yeah,
it happened quickly. And if they don't win 10 or more, yeah, I would fire his ass. Again, so if they have a top 3 roster and he's going 9-4, he's not that good.
I don't 100% quote me on this one yet, but they have 13 returning starters by my numbers. Mm-hmm. That's probably going to be one of the better higher numbers in the SEC for next season. So it just sort of further illustrates that whether it's roster talent, returning production, returning starters, it all seems to be there for a step forward. Also, take these things with a grain of salt, but you are hearing like some of the buzzwords about accountability, different off the field. It's now Kalen DeBoer's program after taking over from Nick Saban. I don't know whether to buy into that. All I do know is that both at Fresno and Washington State, it felt like Kalen DeBoer's teams got a lot better in year 2. And certainly they played for the national championship at Washington in year 2. So there might be something to that. Now having a full season to sort of move past Nick Saban, and maybe that works out for him.
Right. And again, I don't think it could be said enough, Stephen. Basically, every time DeBoer did something right, followed it up, something horribly wrong. Let's at least get some consistency here. You know, you get the big win over Georgia, humiliating defeat against Vanderbilt. You rallied South Carolina, you lose to Tennessee. Then you say, "Oh man, we're awesome. We smoked Missouri." That LSU game was a toss up. I think LSU may even be favored. They waxed them, and then they just gave it all away to Oklahoma. Then they kind of rallied the troops, won the Iron Bowl convincingly, and then just shat the bed against Michigan. I mean, we can't be living this roller coaster life in Alabama. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, especially with all the things that we mentioned, just having the nation's best, roster or one of the best rosters, and right, that much talent, a roster that made the college football playoff the year before and had enough to make it last season. So
with
the quarterback situation too this year.
Right. And I just remember this was so funny, Steven. I wish I would have saved this comment, but somebody, if you go back, a little Easter egg for folks, when we did the reaction, I think it was the Sunday night show to Alabama beating Georgia, and someone in the comments just was basically just destroyed and shattered and said, "What is the point anymore if Alabama could have Nick Saban? And then they have this the next great one in Kalen DeBoer. Football's not even fun anymore." And that lasted 6 days. You know what I mean?
what a difference a week makes, right?
All right, Dave, shout out to JR. What a band. We should have just started with Georgia, just to the greatness of JR here. But he wants to do Georgia next, Steven. So we appreciate you, JR, once again. So thoughts on Georgia. What is the panic meter down in Athens, Steven, with a lot of question marks, but maybe – just maybe the preseason number one team.
Mike, as always, you feel free to tell me if I'm underreacting or overreacting or simply just crazy. I am going to set the number at 3.
Hmm.
Not too high, largely because this is just trust in Kirby Smart. They only have about 7 returning starters by my metrics. Sort of quiet in the portal. They've made some good additions at receiver. They do have a first-time quarterback, of course, in Gunnar Stockton. I think it's fair to say there are more questions this year about Georgia than maybe in previous years. But it is also really hard to doubt Kirby Smart.
Yeah, I think that's fair. They're the program you give the benefit of the doubt to. Used to be Alabama, now it's Georgia, of course. And, you know, not enough was said about how difficult their schedule was, yet they navigated it, and had their quarterback not got hurt, who knows? I mean, we can make excuses for about anybody, but I don't think any of the teams that were in the playoff, if you just remove their starting quarterback, would have really gone very far. So, 3... that might even be too high for me, Steve, but I think I'm less panicked on Georgia. But I will say this. I'm running the data. I'm about done. I know I keep teasing it. I'm so close to being done with and huge shout out to Steven for providing all kinds of snap count information. Georgia's completely devastated in terms of defensive line snaps returning. I don't know if you saw that, Steven, but I'll be sharing all this information very soon. But they're 15th in the SEC in returning production on the defensive line. And, you know, you just watch that Super Bowl, and not just the Super Bowl, but other NFL teams like the Packers. You know, they're being built, their defenses, through this Georgia pipeline. And there was a step back at Georgia. And naturally, there had to be, because they were so dang good on the defensive side of the ball. And now you're saying the guys that was kind of a step down, now they're all gone. So I know they recruit as well or better than anybody down. So, I'm not sitting here crying for Georgia, but I'm wondering how good they're going to be on the line of scrimmage, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think only one returning starter on the offensive line, too. So both lines of scrimmage going to be a really early kind of focal point, kind mm-hmm. of figuring out where Georgia is. All that behind the backdrop of a first-time quarterback. It definitely helps when you get Alabama and Texas at your place. Certainly, their schedule is challenging with road trips to Auburn and Tennessee, but getting those two games at home. And like you said, Mike, I think there's just got to be a lot of faith that Kirby Smart being the best coach in college football to go with the most talented roster. Between those two factors, they will figure this out as the season goes along.
Yeah, I think it's one of those where it's just like they may have some issues, but their issues, you can't see me, but I'm doing the air quotes issues, yeah. are going to be good enough to get them right back to the college football playoff and probably Atlanta.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they will make the playoff. The question is, like, are they going to be like the 1 seed? Are they going to be the 5 seed somewhere in there? Their problems, and I think maybe this is something when you start looking at their schedule, like getting Texas later in the season, they get Alabama sort of at the front. They're going to find out early on how good they are at the road trip to Tennessee and Alabama, but also they're going to be building during the season. They will be more dangerous in November
right.
for that game against Texas than early in the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the schedule, unlike last year, sets up a lot better to be healthier with Mississippi State, Charlotte, and Georgia Tech, 3 of the Final Four.
Absolutely. Yeah, and of course, Georgia Tech not in Bobby Dodd Stadium getting them in Atlanta. Sure, there'll be a lot of Georgia fans show up for that one.
All right, and shout out our buddy Liquid. He gave us a donation. So how about Florida, Steven? They just lost their defensive backs coach to Miami. What's the panic meter for them Gators?
Mike, I'm going big here. I'm going 8. Got Florida as an 8 out of 10 on the panic meter.
Wow.
So a couple reasons here.
And you hate Billy Napier. I'm kidding.
Maybe I'm overreacting, but I think small sample size. I love how they finished the season with those 4 victories, beating Ole Miss, beating LSU. That's significant. It got the Billy Napier era on track. They also bring back DJ Lagway, one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. Defense also finished playing well too, but still the schedule was very difficult. And does that small sample size actually translate into something better this season? That's the big question for me. So I like the direction, but also still think you have a coach that is very much on the hot seat and still has something to prove with a difficult schedule. And you're sitting here wondering, just to be sure, is the defense going to continue to progress? And, Lagway taking that big step forward. So I've got Florida at 8.
Oh, Steven, that's where you lost us. That's where you lost. Come on, this is a red hot Florida game. You sound like, who did your talking points for this one? Was it Cousin Shade, Steven? Come on now. DJ Lagway is elite. But yeah, if we're talking Billy Napier, it's a 10. I'm worried about him still. But he managed to turn it around. Defense took major strides. Of course, losing a defensive backs coach the week of right before spring. That doesn't help. But I think 8 may be a little too rich. I certainly could see the season going sideways, but I'm trying to temper expectations because last year I hyped them up and then I sold them down the river and then they came right back and about finished right where I thought they would. So, you know, all in all, is an excellent season. Can they duplicate it? It's going to be the million-dollar question, but here's what I'm worried about with Florida. I think they could take some strides. I think you said this, so I'm stealing your talking point here, Steven. I think they could be better, but the record's not as good because of the schedule. And we all know Florida fans, they're unique. They're awesome. They're passionate. They demand excellence. If they go 7-5, I mean, even 8-4 after last year winning 8, how are they going to take it? I think that's the biggest question. I mean, they'll lie and say they didn't want Billy Napier fired. They wanted him fired, you know, a month into the season. And now they're his biggest fan. How will they respond? Let's say they lose at LSU, at Miami, and Texas. I think those are all reasonable. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but considering it's at LSU, it's at Miami, and Texas could be elite again. If you're 2-3 and your 2 wins are Long Island and South Florida, I mean, they're going to want his ass gone.
I mean, that's also, they also get A&M the week after Texas. They could easily be 2-4 going into right. That Mississippi State game. So I think my high level of panic is I like where this team ended. And I sort of I'm giving them a high panic meter, but I actually have them like in the top 15 of my early top 25. It's just that I got let down because I thought last season they would start off better, but of course they didn't with those losses to Miami and Texas A&M. So maybe I got burned a little bit, but mm-hmm. I still think that just because if you have a coach that is still very much on the hot seat territory and you still need to prove that it's not just 4 games, it's a whole season. That's why I went with the high panic meter here, but I like the direction and I think they're going to be pretty good this year.
Too high, too rich for my blood, Steven. All right, let's go back to alphabetical. Unless we get another donation, we'll kick your team to the top of the list. So let's go with those Razorbacks. Steven, what's the panic meter for Sam Pittman and company?
I'm a little worried this might be too high, but I'm going to go with an 8 as well.
Ooh.
So...
I don't know if that's high enough.
I was worried I was going to be too high. I was worried I should have had this a little bit closer to like 6 or something. I think in the most generous or most optimistic scenario, mm-hmm. Mike, you and I have talked about Petrino plus Talen Green. You can look at every position. You can go, they've got a revamped receiving core. They lose to Quindon Jackson. They've got some defensive losses up front and in the secondary. But you could easily say, they've got Talen Green. They've got Petrino. The offense is going to take a step forward, but the schedule was also really difficult again next year. And also kind of tandem with Florida, there's also, you kind of got to stay of execution from firing your head coach.
Right.
How much does that translate to this year? Because he's right back on it in 2025. So I went with 8. A lot of changes, tough schedule, a lot of questions, I think, still.
Yeah, and this is the one where I'm doing, again, apologies for keep referencing something that I've not actually put out there, but you guys will see. This is a team, Steven, that is, it's certain parts, defensive back, receiver, completely decimated in terms of guys they've lost from last year. Now, they've added via the transfer portal, so I'm only talking returning production. But we're basically completely starting from scratch at those two positions, losing your best defensive lineman. I don't know, Steven. I sense a great deal of apathy from the Arkansas fan base. And this is from someone who loves that program. I love Sam Pittman. I want him to win. But I think the fans are tired of, again, it's not like they've been awful, but they just seem to be stuck in neutral. You know, you beat Tennessee, and then you don't win another really meaningful game. The rest, you did beat State, but that, as bad as they were, that was not meaningful. You beat Auburn, which was a great win. And then you turn right around, you lose to A&M. You had Oklahoma State, and you blew it. You know what I mean? Like there's just time and time again. I understand it. I mean they're not like Florida where they demand excellence, but they demand better than this. And I don't know that they're going to get it.
I think the words you used there was the word that came to my mind when was kind of figuring out the panic meter, and that is stuck. It's almost like they're not good enough to punch above 7-8 wins right now, but there's a lot of passion. There's a lot of want to be better than 6-6, 7-5. And it also feels like they have been close at times to some big time wins. I mean, the A&M game last year, obviously they beat Tennessee. They kind of pushed Texas later in the season. But I think that's the problem, is you sort of feel like you're close, but you're also stuck. So how do you take that next step forward? And I think there should be plenty of doubts about whether or not this staff can actually do that.
Any hope, though, that perhaps with this revenue share, like that could be the great equalizer, because again, they're not going to spend as much as Ohio State or Texas or Tennessee. But I think some people in their mind, Steve, they have it in their head where like those are the only teams that could compete. I mean, we just saw Florida State. They went all in. They were awful. You know what I mean? So spending money is, especially if it's, you know, it's different if like it. And I'm just completely making this up, but let's say Arkansas spends $15 million on their roster with the revenue share, and Texas spends 50. Yeah, I mean there's no way they could compete. But if Texas is spending 20, and Arkansas spending 15, I know that's a massive gap there. But I truly think you could be competitive. But if as long as it's not a massive gap, which I think it has been in recent years with Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, a couple others. And I think we're seeing those results on the field.
I think that house settlement could help a lot of these teams. And it's really just for one word, and that is retention. It allows you to retain players probably a little bit easier. Certainly there's going to be portal movement. Maybe decreasing the portal windows to just one is also beneficial for some of these teams. You're still going to get a lot of movement, but also I think it gives you an opportunity to have a better shot at retaining some of your best players. So I think it could be a win for programs like an Arkansas, maybe like a Mississippi State as well.
Mm-hmm. All right. How about our favorite? You freeze. Come on down, brother. How about Auburn? Steven, what is the panic meter for Auburn heading into year 3 for old Hugh?
Mike, it's almost at the very end, but we're going to stop at 9 for Hugh Freeze and Auburn. Am I too low or too high?
Oh, you got to go higher than that. Come on. They just went 5-7, Steven. I was told this man was an elite football coach. He shoulders all the blame. He'd never blame anybody. He would never stab his mother to get ahead or anything like that. Not this man. Not this righteous man. No, 10, all out 10. Steven, if they don't go, I mean, they got to win. I mean, this is pathetic. As well as they're recruiting, they're, you know, top 10. They might have three top 10 classes in a row. Yeah, we got to win 8-9 games here, I think, with what we've got. My panic meters would be at 10.
So I totally agree on the expectations. I think it has to be at least 8-4, maybe even higher than that. The only reason why I didn't go with 10 was because of the pickup of Jackson Arnold. It sort of feels, you know, this is their guy, a little bit of optimism there, a quarterback. So I knocked them from a 10 to a 9, sort of their offseason additions, giving them some optimism. But the reality is Hugh Freeze has had two losing seasons in a row. And they're, once you've changed over the roster, you've changed over the staff, you start running out of people to throw under the bus other than one guy, and that's the head coach. So it feels like 2025 is definitely a make or break season. But also, Hugh Freeze and his offensive acumen, he's done a good job of calling, you know, whatever it is, calling plays, developing quarterbacks. Seems like it needs to be put to good use this year, given the quarterback situation and the offensive firepower they have.
Well, since we're talking about panic, let's just assume, and this is a safe assumption. Everybody knows how fair I am with Hugh Freeze, so I'm going to let Steven answer here. This is true. He always blows one critically. No shot. No way. Remember last year, Steven? I mean, Cal was like a pick your score type game.
Yeah.
At least we thought it was. Boy, were we wrong. We were wrong about a lot of these. But which game will Auburn completely blow? And we'll not say the players. Let's blame Hugh Freeze 100%. What's a game they blow this year? Please let me know if it's Ball State or South Alabama. Or, I mean, these are realistic scenarios given that man's track record.
South Alabama's got a pretty good offense. Major Applewhite, former Texas quarterback, the head coach down there. I think they'll be one of the favorites in the Sun Belt this year. So that kind of fits. What about November 1st against Kentucky, though? Zach Calzada coming back to Auburn?
Oh, buddy. I mean, I would not mind that at all. I'll tell you that.
Man, that would be setting up a stretch. You know, I guess you could kind of see like Auburn gets Georgia and Missouri at home. Maybe they go 1-1, they go 2-0, they beat Arkansas, and here comes Kentucky desperate for an SEC win. Zach Calzada getting some revenge against his former team. So maybe November 1st against Kentucky makes the most sense here.
Okay, I love it. You know what else I love, Steven? And that is, of course, Shop Mando. Come on. If you're stinky like Hugh Freeze's record, you need to check out shopmando.com. And that promo code SEC, Steven, will get you 40% off a starter pack over at Shop Mando. What is this starter pack? It's a solid stick of deodorant, cream tube deodorant, and two free products of your choice with that promo code SEC at shopmando.com. I got some Shop Mando. They sent it over to Shane and I. And if we're ever lucky enough, Steven, to get a third package from the great people over at Mando, I'm sending some over to yours to clean up these panic meters, these stinky panic meters that you're handing out here, Steven. Shout out Shop Mando. Again, promo code SEC. It'll get you $5 off, which is 40% off the whole product, Steven. So this is not a very expensive starter pack you can get from Shop Mando. So again, shopmando.com, promo code SEC. Clean your act up, Steven. Clean your act up, Hugh Freeze. Get you some Shop Mando.
Only appropriate we were talking about Auburn and Kentucky and this sort of space here after doing the Mando ad. I did see this in the store the other day, Mike, and my first inclination was, I can't pick it up in the store. I got to use the promo code, and I started thinking about you and Cousin Shane and supporting the show, so just kindly walked away and have to hit up the online store.
Yes, unless maybe take it up to the register. Tell them SEC. See if they'll give you a discount. I highly doubt it. But all right, speaking of stinky, how about Kentucky? Come on, what's the panic meter? This is another one, Steven, where, oh, Lordy, I'm doing the returning production. I know they've hit the portal hard, but, oh, man, it's a rough scene over here.
Mike, I think there's only one number that makes sense here, and that is 10. I think it's got to be a 10 for Mark Stoops in Kentucky. We talked about Stuck. We talked about that with Arkansas. It very much feels that way at Kentucky. I just don't, you know, coming into the season, seeing a lot of Kentucky fans kind of talk about what is the optimism for this year, doesn't really seem to be a ton at Kentucky. And Mike, you and I have talked about this, that last season they were one incompletion away from a winless season in SEC play. Things just seem very stale to go with massive roster questions.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I mean, you make the Calzada jokes. I mean, I like him. I think he's a solid player, but I don't think he's a program saver, if that makes sense. So the fact that we've hit those, you know, that's where we're at. I don't know, Steven. I just don't know. I think the offensive coordinator's in over his head. I think his old quarterback got better when he left him. I thought his old running back got better when he left him. I don't know. I'm hoping they can win them a conference game. I know they did go 1-7. Give them credit. It was a heck of a one. Kept Ole Miss out of the playoff. But I don't know. I don't know if they win a single conference game this year. I really don't.
I'm having a hard time finding a spot where Kentucky will be favored. I mean, we joked about the Auburn game. You know, maybe you could talk yourself into maybe they upset Vanderbilt, but if that's where we're talking about Kentucky, that's probably not a good spot to be this season if we're talking about trying to upset Vanderbilt to break into the win column. Also, Toledo in the season opener is no joke. They are one of the better programs in the MAC. They just beat Mississippi State last season. They have a track record of sort of knocking off power conference opponents. So the opener isn't guaranteed. And I like what they did in the portal. I think it kind of established a floor. But man, you're replacing so much on the offensive line. So many of those stalwarts on defense are gone. I think Calzada also gives you a nice floor at quarterback, but is it good enough to elevate you against a very difficult schedule? And I think that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and shout out and the comments are on fire right now, Steven. Shout out Cousin Dakota. He said, no need to panic. You're already dead. Oh, that's about the nicest thing I could say. Hey, speaking of nice, how about Nick? Shout out, Nick. Appreciate your brother. He just gave us $5. Go ahead and get us out of the way. Mississippi State, Steven. Hey, things are on the up and up. I don't know, up and up, but can't get much worse than 2-10. So where's the panic meter for Mississippi State?
I'm actually on the lower side of this. I graded at a 6.
Hmm.
Is that pretty fair, or do you think that's too low?
I think this season will certainly dictate a lot of that. Let me ask you this, Steve, though, speaking of this, because we got asked this mailbag question that was pretty fascinating the more I thought about it. Of the three SEC teams that did not make a bowl game last year, so we're talking Auburn, we're talking Kentucky, we're talking Mississippi State, which one is most likely to have the most win improvement, if that makes sense? So when I initially read that, I was thinking, well, okay, who's going to make the biggest impact? Who's going to be the better team? And I think the easy answer is Auburn, right? But they won 5 games. So if they get to 7, let's say, that's just +2. Mississippi State only won 2. If they win 5, that's +3. So Mississippi State would be the winner there, unless Kentucky makes a big jump. But again, I'll ask you again, Auburn, Kentucky, Mississippi State, which one are you most confident can improve the most in just the win column next year?
I would probably stick with Auburn. When I look at Mississippi State's schedule, I can at least talk myself into 3. I think they'll get to a 4th. So that puts them at like +2.
Right.
I tend to think Auburn will get to the right side. So that puts them at like +2, +3. So it's close. Yeah. I mean, we talk about this a lot this offseason so far, but I really do think last year was a year zero for Jeff Lebby. I mean, you're starting from scratch on scheme, your roster, you know, coaching, you've overhauled everything the last 2 years. So this year, I think will give us a better idea of sort of where this thing is going, even with a difficult schedule.
Right. And here's the other thing, Stephen, where we have seen this many a time, shout out Chad Morris, where a guy, you know, comes out here and it's like, oh, good Lord, this is a disaster hire, which was kind of my initial thought when they lost to Arizona State, when they got steamrolled by Toledo. I basically wrote them off after that. And not that the Florida game was much better, but how many teams would have just put it in the, you know, and they lost their, meanwhile, they lost their quarterback for the season. I believe it was against Florida.
Yeah.
And then they bounce right back. I know it, you know, final score doesn't look that competitive, but that was a competitive game against Texas. That was a competitive game. The next one against Georgia. It was a fairly competitive game against A&M, on and on and on. I mean, this is not a team that gave up at any point in time. And even the Egg Bowl after a disastrous season, and I get it, that's your rival, so you should get up for it. But I mean, at no point did I see a team that really quit. I just saw a bad team that, particularly on defense, and if they could clean that up, and I'm not saying be elite on defense, but just don't be pathetic. You know, I think they can outscore people, and I think that'll be the key to them pulling an upset or two this fall.
I do too. I think it speaks well of Jeff Lebby for two reasons. One, to adapt during the season after your starting quarterback is hurt and going to a true freshman. And I think that speaks well of his ability to, of course, he's got a track record of being an offensive coordinator and a good one, but being able to adapt during the season. And then the second thing is a team that had low expectations already to begin with, the season quickly went in the wrong direction because of Shapen's injury. So the fact that they were still being competitive against Texas and Georgia and Ole Miss, I think it's a good sign. And I think that's why if I'm Mississippi State, I'm not panicking yet. I could find reasons kind of on both sides of maybe it should be a little bit higher or a little bit lower, but also think you got to give him a little bit of a chance in year two with a much more stocked roster and some additions to the portal that maybe fit what they want to do a little bit better.
Yeah. And it's funny, Stephen, people that kind of like tell on themselves in the comments, they're like, how was 38-35-13 against Texas competitive? Well, someone didn't watch a football game. Because I mean, at halftime, it was 6-14. Texas scored with 3 minutes left to make it out of reach. So again, you got to watch a game. You got to watch a game. They were never going to beat them, really. And Texas was, if I recall, Texas had a couple turnovers. But again, that's not what you see from a team that has completely given up to where, you know, they go on the road. I think the spread was probably like 35 points. You know, it was something insane like that. But I don't know, we could talk about Mississippi State and how close they were all night, Stephen. Let's get to LSU. I'm fascinated to see what you think about this, as is Cousin Jared down there. LSU panic meters, Stephen. Is it, are you panicked at all? Because this is a popular preseason playoff team. I've seen many, many people project the Tigers to make the playoff. I'm wondering where you're at.
So my expectations in preseason, my preseason predictions probably are starting to filter into this one, because I think as the research goes on, I'm getting a little bit higher about LSU this offseason. So I've got them at 7. I think this could easily be a little bit higher, but I also think the kind of how last season played out, there was the fire Brian Kelly chance in that one game. Bryce Underwood left to commit to Michigan. You know, things didn't seem like they were going great. And then sort of stabilized at the end of the season, beating Oklahoma, beating Vanderbilt, winning the bowl game. I think a pretty solid transfer class is coming in. Garrett Nussmeier's back. So I think the expectation is pretty clear. Brian Kelly has to get to the playoff next season. And I think anything short of that would be a massive disappointment. So I went with 7, maybe because I'm kind of optimistic that this team is going to get to the playoff next year.
Yeah, just like Cousin Jared said, no panic, but playoff or fire.
Right? Yeah, no pressure.
So panic, maybe pressure is the right word for old Brian Kelly. but that's what he came down here for. And yeah, I think it's important what you said there, Stephen. I mean, the Rome was burning after Alabama. I think they really needed that Florida one to stabilize, and clearly they didn't get it. So, I mean, things could have went horribly wrong had they lost at home to Vanderbilt or against Oklahoma. But really, I think that Vanderbilt, even though Vanderbilt's much improved, that would have no, you could not have sold that to a single LSU diehard. But it didn't. They ended on a 3-game winning streak. So, no panic for the family. Just give me more money, says he would. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know if panic's the right word. I think they're pretty confident going into the season. But if you were to tell me that there's a team that is coming in confident, that the wheels come off, I think LSU could be that candidate too, with at Clemson, Florida week 3, at Ole Miss week 5. South Carolina right after that. A lot of opportunities to trip up. Doesn't mean they will, but this is a, I don't know, maybe I'll disagree with you here. Not, panicked is the wrong word, but intriguing. This is the most intriguing team perhaps in the SEC.
Yeah, it feels like LSU could either win the SEC or finish 7-5. And it feels like they have a pretty wide variance if things start to go in the wrong direction. And you mentioned the schedule. I mean, that second half of the schedule with A&M, Alabama, and a road trip to Oklahoma, I mean, that's pretty dang difficult too. And this also feels, I would say, probably fair to say, like it is a make or break year for Brian Kelly, because he has everything that he needs to win at LSU. The resources to go out and get this transfer class, paying Blake Baker and all those defensive assistants, and you've got Garrett Nussmeier, who will probably be one of the top quarterbacks picked in 2026. So it's like, if it doesn't work this year, when is it going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. How about, we said that last year about Ole Miss. That's where we're going next, Steve. What's the panic beater for the Ole Miss Rebels?
I'm going pretty low. I'm going to go with a 3.
Ooh.
And here's my reasoning for this one. So I think LSU, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, throw Tennessee in there. A little bit different of high school recruiting, talent, and of course, expectations. Ole Miss just went all in on last season. They came up short, but I think there's proof of concept there. And Kiffin got Ole Miss to the doorstep of the playoff. Pretty consistent double-digit wins. I know they're losing a lot. They're only going to have about 4 returning starters. But number one, I think it's trust factor in Lane Kiffin and Austin Simmons. I think if you're an Ole Miss fan, you have to feel pretty good about Lane Kiffin finding the pieces around what could be your next star quarterback. So I know they're losing a lot, but I think the expectations are certainly a little different in Oxford than they are in Athens or at LSU right now.
Yeah. Well, this is one where, I'm a little concerned. I'm not going to lie.
Are you concerned about me in my ranking or Ole Miss's personnel?
No, I'm worried about Ole Miss and maybe, cause they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it, Stephen, but Kiffin was ready to jump ship. And I'm wondering if he knew. I wonder if he knew what was coming. I wonder if he knew that this was going to be a rebuild. And again, a rebuild, that's different these days in Oxford after winning 21 games in 2 years. So a rebuild could be another 8-5, you know, and that's not that good, but that would be like a top 20 season all time in school history. You know what I mean? So they're paying a lot to remain competitive. And I said it on a recent show. I just said that, but at the same time, Stephen, I don't know outside. I did this exercise with Shane the other day. Outside of at Georgia today, I don't know that there's a game that Ole Miss will be the underdog in. Is there one that you would have them? Again, you got Georgia State at home, at Kentucky, Arkansas at home, Tulane at home, maybe LSU at home. That possibly could be one. Washington State at home, at Georgia, at Oklahoma, South Carolina at home. I believe that's Citadel at home, Florida at home, and at Mississippi State. So I'm not sitting here saying they're going to go 11-1, but I am saying outside of Georgia, and I don't know where you are with that LSU one. I'm not seeing another one. Let's discount those two. Are you seeing a single game today that Ole Miss would not be favored in?
The only one I would pick would be LSU. But to your point, that puts them at 10, at least 10 they should be favored in.
Right. So again, I'm saying rebuild year and you might go 10-2, which if that's a rebuild year, then Lane Kiffin is exactly who I said he was recently when I put him number two coach in the dang SEC, because that would be, you know, again, they never had a 10-win season before he got there. And now that's like, now last year they did it and it's like, what a disappointment that was, you know?
What do you think the expectation is among Ole Miss fans for 2025? I'm legitimately curious if it's like playoff or like 9 wins again.
I think, it's fascinating. I think realistically, 9-10 wins.
Yeah.
with this schedule. Yeah. Again, if you give them Florida schedule or Georgia, you know, then it's a different story. But yeah, I mean, I if I'm sitting here looking at this as an Ole Miss fan, I'm saying maybe we'd be sneaky good. You know, if we beat LSU, which again, we beat them last time we played them in Oxford. It's not like it would be a stunner. Shout out Brandon. He's a big Ole Miss. He says expectation is playoff. If you beat LSU, there's no reason you don't go to the playoff. I don't think. Because if you're beating LSU, that means you could still lose to Georgia and you could still get upset somewhere else, whether that's at Oklahoma, South Carolina at home, Florida at home, which you may not want to lose that Florida one because you got to, if you're trying to make the playoff, you got to have some momentum. But basically I'm giving you a mulligan somewhere if you beat LSU. So, you know, I think that's fair. I think it's fair to expect playoff with the schedule.
If Ole Miss beats LSU, South Carolina, and Florida at home, and we assume those teams are as good as we think they could be this preseason,
right?
And Ole Miss only loses to Georgia and somewhere else, they should be in the playoff. That would be a pretty, like, if you could sweep those three games and then maybe you lose back to back to Georgia and Oklahoma,
right?
You're still in great shape to make the playoff.
What if it's Kentucky though? Oh,
oh.
Kentucky's only covered. I'm just kidding. they'd still be in at 10-2. You're in. Indiana just proved that with their weak ass slate.
You and I have talked about this offseason, but it is something that I think about a lot when it comes to Ole Miss. Is it's supposed to happen this year, but it doesn't. And then everybody writes them off, and then maybe it happens the next year. Like you see this in sports all the time with teams going to the Super Bowl or World Series or even college football. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if they went to the playoff. In fact, I think it's pretty realistic given that schedule.
Well, speaking of playoff aspirations and a schedule to get you there, how about Missouri, Stephen? Where is the panic meter for the Missouri Tigers, who start the season with 6 straight home games? This is an incredible slate they get.
I love the schedule for Missouri. That is a schedule to make them a playoff dark horse in 2025. On the same path as Ole Miss, I'm going to go on the low side here. I'm going to go with 4. Yes, they are losing a lot, but they've got 21 wins over the last 2 years. And similar to Ole Miss, this feels like a trust factor thing. 7 starters back on defense. Promising transfer quarterback in Bo Prabula. Trust Eli Drinkwitz to sort of fill in around the quarterback with some skill talent from the portal. Favorable schedule. So I'm balancing those two things by going, yes, you're losing a lot, but it also feels like the program is on really stable ground going into 2025.
Same thing we just said with Ole Miss. If Missouri goes 10-2, regardless of who the two are, but let's assume Alabama and let's say South Carolina, just for funsies. If they're 10-2, are they in the playoff?
I think so.
Yeah.
My only hesitation would be, and I guess if we're counting a win over Texas A&M in that scenario, who I think will be ranked.
Right.
That probably gets you in, because Indiana got in this year with a pretty weak schedule and they lost to Ohio State, right? So the 10-2 in the SEC should get Missouri in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think they're in. I think we've seen it. So you know, that's all they care about is just winning, how many games you win, and that'll put you in. So man, they're right there. They're potentially right there again. And who knows, man? We've got us one of the more consistent. If they make the playoff next year, they might have to be considered a top five program in the SEC, which is hilarious, because it seems like if you don't love Mizzou, you hate them.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, trying to go through my head of, you know, top five programs and sort of top 10 and where you would slot Missouri in. But man, if they go double digit wins again next year, make the playoff, and they have all this turnover on the offensive side of the ball and their defense continues to get better, I mean, they got to be in the conversation, right?
I think they're there.
Yeah.
I think they're there, especially if Ole Miss takes a step back. Because in my mind, they'll be like replacing them.
That's true. Yeah, that would. I would agree with that then.
That's what I know. I've made a good point. Steven says he agrees. All right. Let's see if I agree with you, Steven, with Oklahoma. What is the panic meter for old Boomer Sooner?
It's not 10, but it's almost there. We're going to go with 9. And the only reason it isn't a 10 is that John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle are on their way to help the offense this offseason.
I'm going to ask you what Shade asked me recently. Have you already bought your John Mateer jersey, Steven? Is it hanging up in your closet or what?
It's hanging up to the Arch Manning jersey. So,
yeah, I mean, how can it be anything other with, man, what a gauntlet. What a gauntlet. I don't know who Oklahoma pissed off in the league office, but they are not be given a break here by any means, are they?
No, they're not. And also in the non-conference schedule, I think Michigan's going to be better this year too. I don't know if Michigan can go into Norman and win, but that schedule would look a lot easier if you could sub in, Louisiana Monroe or, you know, some Old Dominion or something this season. They're just looking at the ranked opponents they could play in the SEC. I mean, there's a scenario all 8 of those opponents could be ranked this season. So the schedule is very difficult. I think Oklahoma's defense is going to be pretty good once again, especially up front. The question just goes back to this offense, and it's going to be the biggest mystery, the biggest wild card to sort of figure out, because I know Mike hates when I say this, but it can't get worse than last year. I just don't know how much better it's going to be this year.
Is it? They're probably not, but is Oklahoma, when it goes to a vote, let's assume they're voting, Steven, should we go to 9 games? How quickly does Oklahoma say, nope?
Probably Oklahoma, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Kentucky, probably all on the no side, right?
I would have to think so. Till they see that check, then they'll change their minds, you know.
Yeah, that millions of dollars that ESPN will kindly slide to them for another game probably makes all that anxiety disappear.
But hey, I kid. But at the same time, do you think Oklahoma? I think Oklahoma would be happy if the schedules are just balanced. Because again. Yep. What did Steven just say? And I agree 100%. If Auburn is better, they'll probably be ranked. That means probably all 8 conference teams you're facing are going to be ranked. How in the world, in the year 2025, in the SEC, does Oklahoma get this schedule and Missouri gets this one, where, you know, how many ranked teams are they going to face? 1, 2, 3, maybe four.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And again, I'm not trying to pick on Missouri, but if we're gonna mock Oklahoma for the schedule, we gotta turn it around and say, again, these are two teams in the same conference. How is one getting this and one's getting that? If we're gonna go to nine, can we at least try to? There's no guarantees, but can we at least make it more balanced to where we don't? And Florida's probably saying the same thing. How does Tennessee get that schedule, and we get this one? You know, it's not. If you're a fan of one of those teams, I don't think it's right.
I think the unbalanced schedules are probably here to stay, just because at 16 teams, it is difficult. I will throw out an idea, and I think I may have mentioned this to you before. I used to watch the NBA draft lottery, and it was always funny to see the executives or players or whoever it is. They're all sitting there very uncomfortable. They might have a little bit of sweat. I think let's pick the three games that are protected every year. Let's have all the coaches come to Feinbaum Studio or Mike's house for that SEC podcast. And we could maybe balance this out on a 2-year basis by, like, you know, results or something to even this out. So no coach knows outside of the three games that are protected. They have to get the six and they have to see it in real time. So we could see Mark Stoops uncomfortably sweating when he sees Alabama and South Carolina and Georgia pop up.
Man, that would be must-see TV. That'd be the highest-rated program that SEC Network puts on every year.
Absolutely. See, that's a way we could shake this up, create some more programming. I think it's a win-win for everybody except the coaches.
Yep. All right. How about let's shift it to them Gamecocks. Steven, what is the panic meter for Shane Beamer and company heading into this is another one, Steven, where I heard recently someone said, it's playoff or bust out here in Columbia. It can't be playoff or bust everywhere, but apparently it is at the SEC.
Mike, I'm pretty low on the panic meter for South Carolina. I'm going with a 3. Am I crazy?
No, hopefully I muted that properly so no one heard that, but I just blew my nose something nasty. But yeah, a 3, a panic meter, certainly. But there's going to be panic. South Carolina fans are another one. They're fantastic. They got high expectations. Just won 9 football games. Should have won 10. Well, really, should have won 11 because they got cheated out of LSU, certainly. And I think had they had all their guys, they would have whooped Illinois' ass. But with what they got coming back, they're eyeing the playoff. So this is – the panic is – I might even, you said 3, right? I might even put it 2 or 1 right now. They're making good comments though in the comments section. Beamer's a little up and down. That's true. But panic now, to me, very, very, very low. Well, panic ramps up in a damn hurry that entire first 5 games, Steven, because I think every South Carolina fan, as they probably should, expects to win all those games. Virginia Tech in Atlanta, Vanderbilt at home, at Missouri. Maybe that's not fair because Missouri is one of the vast majority of those matches. But still, I think South Carolina fans expect to win that game. And then Kentucky at home. So I think at worst you're supposed to be 4-1 after 5. But if they're anything less, and it seems like every year, Stephen, we go into a South Carolina season saying, all right, if we could just be 4-1, we're going to be money this year. And more often than not, they don't get there, but they certainly did it last year. So the pressure's on to keep that consistency up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think getting off to a fast start is going to be crucial because you look at that back half of the schedule. Clemson, South Carolina won last year, but I suspect they'll be a top 10 team. You've got A&M, Ole Miss on the road. You've got Alabama, and of course the LSU game. So getting off to a fast start is paramount to making the playoff. I think in terms of the panic meter, the only reason I didn't have it at 1 or 2 was change at the offensive coordinator spot. You had a good thing going with Dow Loggins last year. I think Mike Shula is going to be fine, but there's got to be a little bit of concern there. And also just the losses that they have on the offensive and defensive lines. It is such a line of scrimmage league. 2 starters back on the line, losing Kyle Kennard on the defensive front. So that kind of raised it a couple points for me. But Lenora Sellers is the ultimate wild card and sort of player that could overcome all that.
Right. And again, last year, I mean, they whooped Kentucky. So we forget about Old Dominion, but that was an ugly start in 2023, Stephen. They started 2-3 2-6 in 2022, even though they finished red hot, they started 2-1. And I'm going back all the way to Beamer's first year. I mean, they started 2-2. So, and I mean, they, for whatever reason, Beamer's got to figure out how to start faster, because this is, you know, 1 or 2 years you could write off, but damn near every year they're starting too slow. And this year, if you start slow, and by starting slow means you drop a game you shouldn't, you're going to have to make that up somewhere. Because again, the goal's playoff. So the end is from October 11th to November 15th. Every one of those is potentially losable. So I don't think this is a team that can afford a slow start.
I guess the good thing for South Carolina is if you get off to a slow start again, that's probably the most manageable slate you could ask for. Whereas if you think your team is going to be peaking by midseason, and you still have to play Alabama, Ole Miss, A&M, and Clemson, you're getting your team's best shot against your best competition, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. All right. How about Tennessee? Where's that donation, Shane? Come on, cousin Shane. Tennessee, what's the panic meter for the ball, Stephen?
I'm going with a 4. Ooh. Am I too low or too high?
I mean, the night of the Ohio State game, it was at 11. But, panic. I'd probably raise it. I think I'd raise it to about 5. Because I don't know. This is a team. I don't think they're going to fall off by any means. But I've said it many times, and I'll be happy to be wrong, Stephen. But unless I knew the SEC was getting guaranteed 4 maybe, or 5, which – again, 5's very unlikely, but if you could guarantee me the SEC gets 4, that'd be a good start. But I don't know that Tennessee is a team that is going to duplicate another playoff run. Not saying they won't come close, but I think, and again, that's kind of how the lens I'm looking at is we just made the playoff, so I'm panicked is not the right word, but I'm concerned that the Vols take a slight step back.
I think my concern level with Tennessee starts with acknowledging they do have personnel losses. Offensive line, they lose some guys on defense, and of course Dylan Sampson's gone. But I look at this as Tennessee just made the playoff. I think Nico still has another level he can get to, especially under Josh Heupel. And I kind of trust Heupel to figure this out as the season goes along, on a pretty favorable schedule. And my question is less about, I don't think the bottom falls out for Tennessee at all. The question is what is the ceiling, and can Heupel raise it to, instead of getting bounced in the first round of the playoff, can you make some noise and win a game or two and get to the semifinals? I don't think they can do that next year, just given the personnel, but that's probably my biggest question. Like with all these teams, they have personnel losses, but it feels Tennessee, much like Missouri, Ole Miss, is like there is a built-in trust factor with Tennessee right now. You just kind of assume Heupel's going to get them into the conversation to be 8, 9, 10 victories.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kind of asked you something similar. I'm not comparing Hugh Freeze and Josh Heupel. I would never throw you, Coach Heupel, into that, saying you're anything like Hugh Freeze. But one thing that Tennessee fans are well aware of, Tennessee struggles on the road at times. And I mean, there's many examples: Arkansas, Ohio State, Alabama's, Florida's, on and on and on. What is a road record that Tennessee needs to have? If we knew the future, Stephen, and we're saying Tennessee making the college football playoff, what what's the road record that Tennessee has to get, you think, to make the college football playoff?
I think they can afford one loss. So right. I think they have to probably, I'm going to assume they're going to be favored against Mississippi State and Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got to split Alabama and Florida and hope your only other loss is to Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, again, that's not to say that Heupel can't win the road games. He's beaten at LSU. That was a huge one. Trying to think if there's many others. I mean, Kentucky's, yeah, that really shouldn't be considered a marquee road game. But again, that's what you got to overcome, right? Oklahoma last year. Oklahoma wasn't that good, but at the time they were undefeated. So, I mean, that was a huge game. That was game day. That was, you know, I'll give them that one at Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was solid last year. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but that's the next step. Because Alabama's going to be in the playoff hunt. Florida fans, if everything breaks right, they may be in the playoff hunt. You got to go on the road and beat potentially a top 15, top 10-ish team. And that's kind of what I'm betting against them. But that's got to be the next step for Heupel in his Tennessee program.
Could easily erase that this year by going on the road and beating Alabama. Because I think in the Florida game, I think they're both very winnable. And I think to your point on the road schedules, if you have to have, you know, your road schedule every year in the SEC, and two of them this year are against arguably two of the teams going to be picked at the bottom with Mississippi State and Kentucky, it's about as favorable as it gets. And I think when you start thinking about Tennessee this season is it's yes, there are questions, but it also goes back to, man, that schedule's pretty nice right. Despite all the personnel losses.
Well, speaking of an easy schedule, Texas, come on down. Welcome to the league. Let's just get y'all damn cruise control here to Atlanta. Once again, panic beater for them Longhorns, Steven. Oh, do we lose you, Steven?
I'm here, Mike. I think I may have lost you there for a second.
Apologies. Can you repeat that? What panic meter for Texas Longhorns?
Yeah, Mike, I think this is pretty small. I'm going with two, only because I didn't feel like I could give a team a one on the panic meter because somebody out there is going to be panicking, right?
Yeah, they get the Arch bump. So, we all know your affection there for Arch. So that completely makes sense. I'm kind of kidding here, but yeah, it's hard to be panicked about much other than, you are losing some key pieces, but I think they lost more last year. So this very well could be preseason number one as well, if not number two, and they may be facing number one. So, I'm trying to come up with something to say here about Texas. Any chance, and not that I think this will happen, because it seems like every step, I know there's backlash and everything, not from Stephen, who's anointed Arch Manning, but any chance that there's like too much hype, too much focus, too much attention that causes division or anything there in the Texas locker room? How about that?
I think Sarkisian's done a really good job, though, of managing that situation. If you think back to when Arch got to campus and Ewers was still there, and of course he's been there the last couple of years, but that quarterback debate, it felt like Sarkisian shut it down. And so I kind of have a little bit of a trust factor now in Sark, especially with the way he's progressed the program, to be able to kind of keep things rolling and just subbing in the quarterbacks. It's going to be a pretty seamless shift. But I do think there is something that you said that is worth considering, which is hype and expectations. And they're going to be out of control. some people may have already started that this offseason with their quarterback rankings. So there's going to be a lot of hype season opener against Ohio State. But also, what about four new starters on the offensive line? I mean, I trust Kyle Flood, and I think they've got some talent still. But man, four new offensive line starters. I know the schedule's not too difficult, but that seems like if that group doesn't come together, regardless of how good Arch is, the offense could maybe not reach expectations.
Right. And I think, you know, all that, I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate. I think in the NIL and the portal world, I think it's kind of hard to hype and attention. I think that's hard to cause division because all these guys get so much attention and praise and money and all this. So it's like, it's already in the locker room. I think of, I always think about this, Steve. I don't know if you ever heard this story, but I'm sure you remember old Chris Sims.
Yeah.
He was a five-star, and they had this quarterback. We've already mentioned him on this show, Major Applewhite, right? Who was down there. I don't think he was a very touted guy, but he was productive. And then in comes a five-star freshman and legacy, and he had the name. He had all the talent. Well, I the way I heard it, Stephen, was he showed up. You know, it was like the first day. I think back then they didn't even report early, right? So right. They would just show up in August or what have you. And, you know, everyone showed up at like normal, like you normally would, just get dropped off or whatever. And Chris Sims gets chauffeured by a stretch limousine as the number one recruit in the country. And basically from there, he had lost the damn locker room. You know what I mean? So point being, I think Arch Manning and his family have handled it completely different. And it's a different era to where you could do that nowadays. And they would, that's probably what Deion does every day, you know, and it's, and it works for him clearly. So, just different times, but I don't think that division will be there, but I just felt like that's kind of a talking point worth discussing at least.
Yeah, it is. Maybe this is the wrong way to look at it. It does feel like Texas is allowing Arch Manning to do some interviews now. Mm-hmm. I think he did one with ESPN. I think there's another one out there. And I just wonder if that's a way to tamp down expectations, but get some of this new out of the way before you get to spring ball, you get to the summer and you say, okay, now it's time for ball. Arch has done all the media stuff. He's done a great job the last 2 years of serving as the backup. But when right. it's time to ball, I think the switch will flip. So I think Texas has handled it well, and I suspect that Arch will be the world's greatest quarterback this year. Obviously,
and that would have been a completely different story if Quinn was still there as the starter, and they got Arch Manning on ESPN giving national interviews. You know, I mean, that would have been right. a disaster.
Yeah, that'd be a totally different vibe there in Texas.
All right. So speaking of a different vibe, how about A&M, Steven? What is the panic beater? After we were so red hot, we were top of the world, maybe looked like a prophet there for about two butts, and then just the latest evidence of what an idiot I am. What's the panic meter down there in A&M?
I'm going to go right in the middle, and I'm going to say it's a 5. If Texas A&M had finished the end of the season better, it might be a spot or two lower. I don't want to get too high or too low here because I do think I believe in Mike Elko, and I think this program is going to get better in time. I like the fact they have all 5 starters back on the offensive line, plus potential growth out of Marcel Reed. Some questions, obviously, but still, I mean, last season they were in the hunt to make the SEC championship game until the final weekend. So A&M's got a lot of good going for it. I think the question is Mike Elko going to take that good to potential, the good and the potential, and make it into a playoff team? And right now I think the jury's still out, so that's why I'm kind of falling in the middle as a 5.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, it was very disappointing what happened at the end of the season, but it was still massively impressive. I thought just the inheriting a roster, and I know it's different eras, so you know, you got the portal and everything, you can supplement, but to take that, an inherited team, come in the SEC, to go on the road, win multiple league games, and particularly when you start with a tough loss, College Game Day, all this hype, and then you lose that one convincingly, and you come back. You know, there was a lot of signs, Stephen, that A&M is on mutt. I mean, you'd have to be a damn fool to say that they were better under Jimbo. You know what I mean? Like, so I think the future is very bright there in College Station.
Yeah, I mean, to rebound and handle Florida on the road, handle Missouri at home 41-10, and then to beat LSU. And all their losses, I mean, I think you could kind of say, like, Texas was just better. They mm-hmm. ran out of steam against South Carolina, and that was a crucial win for South Carolina during its stretch. But they lost by 2 in overtime after falling way behind against Auburn, and that was the week before Texas. So all their losses, like, there's nothing alarming in any of their losses. I don't really take much stock into the bowl game, considering how many players they were missing. But I mean, it feels like the program is on the right track. The question is like, where is it on the trajectory meter? And it feels like that's what we're going to find out this year.
Let me ask you this though: if it's they'll go 8-4. Come on, guys. Come on. If they go 8-4 again or worse, I'm not saying they will. Well, what would be your panic meter if they went 8-4 or worse?
I would probably raise it to a 7. I think that's where we had Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. You know, after you finish your second year, if you're still, the jury is still out on like potential and where the program is, I would probably raise it to a 7. You can also, I mean, talk yourself into, like, if Marcel Reed doesn't develop, they've got a lot of contributors to replace on defense, especially up front. You know, I could see them maybe only being 9 wins good this year. I won't go 8-4.
All right. Final one here, Stephen. Vanderbilt panic meter, if at all, for the Commodores after their big season, which ended in a bowl victory. imagine predicting that a year ago about the Vanderbilt Commodores couldn't win a conference game, that not only were they going to make a bowl game, but they were going to win it.
Mike, I'm going with 2, only because I don't know if you can go with 1 or 0. There's got to be some panic about replacing 4 new or 4 starters on the offensive line. What if teams are a little bit more adept to what you're doing offensively? But Vanderbilt's playing with a little bit of house money, right? I mean, Clark Lee was on the hot seat. They didn't win a game in SEC play before that. They win 7 games. Pavia wins his appeal. He's back as one of the top quarterbacks in the SEC, and the defense took a big step forward. So I think this is a question, too, of like, where is this program? And after going into 2024, we had a lot of questions, and they went out and won 7 games. It feels like this program is on a lot more solid footing now going into 2025.
Yeah. And I just threw it up there, Steven. Number 1 in the SEC returning pass production, number 1 in the SEC rushing production. And I've been working on the defense just today. They're number 1 in a lot of, or top 2, but number 1 in a few categories on the defensive side of the football in terms of returning production as well. So this is a sneaky, sneaky team next season. I really do think the more I dive into the numbers, you know, that maybe hopefully they've turned a quarter under Clark Lee, and potentially the best is yet to come.
The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause is that road schedule, because man, at South Carolina, at Alabama, at Texas and Tennessee, that's got to be one of the toughest in the country just on road games next year.
Yeah, that's true. But at the same time, and it may take an upset or two, but if you can win all your home games, you're 7-5 again. You're right back. You're even better than you were a year before. So, let's flip out Virginia Tech for maybe LSU or Auburn or Missouri. You know, that you don't even have to sweep. You could even afford to lose one of your home games and still go 6-6. So, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I mean, it is not going to be easy, but I didn't think beating Alabama was going to be easy either, Stephen. And they did that, as well as Auburn, and pushed Missouri to the limit. So I don't know. Maybe it's because I live here, but I'm feeling the buzz, Stephen. I think I'm feeling the Commodore rise here in Nashville.
Also, like we talked about with South Carolina, getting South Carolina early in the season, that's probably a good thing given the fact that the Gamecocks have started slow at times under Shane Beamer. So, yeah, right. I mean, and you beat Virginia Tech last year. So that's a tough start. But at the same time, I think there's reasons to think that, yeah, they could pull off an upset or two.
Yeah, and I'd love to see it, Steven. I really would. I don't like doormats in this conference. And now that we own college football, we're dictating playoff, you know, maybe we can expand it a little bit more. Maybe we can guarantee 6 or 7 spots for the SEC. That's how we get Vanderbilt into this college football playoff.
at the rate that the playoff is expanding and the way we're adding these guaranteed bids, it'll be just in a few years. They'll be talking about about 8 guaranteed spots for the SEC, right?
Yeah, I can't wait for it. Well, Stephen, I'm taking up way too much of your time. Anything else before we hop off the line?
Oh, man, Mike, I got to tell you, I am just knee deep into magazine production for college football. I can't wait for all the cousins and college football fans to check this guide out this year. It's going to be awesome. We've got a lot of great features coming up. So I will say one observation that I have, just looking through returning starters, a lot of teams are, you know, if you think back to, I don't know, 2014 or so, like you'd see 15, 16, 17, like 18 returning starters. A lot of these teams are going to end up about 10 or even under that. So, you know, transition, change is going to be a pretty big theme of this year, I think.
Is a lot of that, obviously, transfer portal, NIL, but how much of that do you think, and this is probably difficult to answer, but how much of that is, you know, the COVID extra year, that coming to an end, is that filtered in there as well?
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. I think it's kind of all of the above. It's transfers. It's, you know, some of the extra years, super seniors, other situations sort of cycling through. And just, you know, just in general, the roster movement over the last couple of years has kind of taken a toll this season. Because, I mean, just flipping through some of these charts that I have, a lot of these teams are going to be under 10 in the SEC. Wow. Like LSU's at 7. Kentucky's at 6. So there's a lot of change in the SEC and elsewhere in college football next year.
Yeah. And that is, I think it's just going to add to the unpredictability and the fun and just, you know, we'll all have our bold predictions and projections, and then the season will get here. And it'll prove once again, none of us know what the hell we're talking about. So, man, it's going to be fun. You know what?
Yeah, it is. And a good thing we got months to sort of figure this out. We can figure out Oklahoma's quarterbacks, Auburn's quarterbacks. I mean, it is funny to think about how our, you know, we spent all offseason, and we do this every year, thinking that XYZ is going to play out. And then week one, you know, Miami and Florida happened, and you thought, this might be the end of it. And then by the midseason and by the end of the year, our opinion on Florida changed a couple times. So I guess what I would say is that instead of panicking, maybe we all need a little patience, right?
Yep. But patience is not something that we have down here in SEC land. So on that note, Stephen, I'm going to cut this one. I appreciate you, as always, hopping on here and dropping so much knowledge on us. We appreciate each and every one of you for hanging out. We'll see you tomorrow. Cousin Shane will be back. We'll see what the big cuz is up to these days. I think he's actually got a little small preview video, so be on the lookout for that. We'll be back tomorrow, another live show. But until then, we'll catch you all with the next one.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.